I'm Dr. Virginia Kane, and I'm director of the Marion County Health Department, which is located in Indianapolis, Indiana. And I'm delighted to introduce you to this illustrious, sometimes amazing panel speakers who are going to speak today. They're going to electrify some of you. With this economic climate, what's going on, leadership is so critical in terms of what's happening in our communities and what we need to have good outcomes. So you're going to hear a variety of leadership development models in the practice setting. And I will start out with my very good friend, Dr. Jay Bernhardt, who served as the director of the National Center of Health Marketing at CDC since 2005. Before that, it's hard to believe, he was in the academic arena. He was the assistant professor of behavioral science and health education at Emory University Rollins School of Public Health. He is a former vice chairperson of the American Public Health Association Executive Board and a colleague with me when I was on the board. Thank you, Jay. And a graduate of the National Public Health Leadership Institute. And he's going to talk to you about applying social media to increase quality time. Thank you.
Thank you very, thank you for that. Sorry about that. Very apropos to have Dr. Kane introducing a leadership session, one of the best public health leaders I know. So thank you so much. I'm going to speak with you today about the experience of my team, actually, in the National Public Health Leadership Institute, where we focused on this notion of it's difficult, very difficult in this day and age to be a leader in public health, to be a leader in general, to be a professional in general. We're so overwhelmed every day with technology and media and information that just is overwhelming for us. And what we spent, my group, and you'll hear more about it in a second, spent quite a bit of time really trying to unpack this issue of how can we be successful public health professionals today and public health leaders today in a time of great information overload and distractions on our daily life. And I want to start by acknowledging the members of my team, two of whom I think are here. Cynthia Lambert is here, Cynthia. And I saw Camille Jones is here too, in the back, there you go. So two of our team is here with us, and I'm delighted to have them here. And you can see the rest of the members of our team, as well as Dr. Ed Baker, who was the mentor for our team. Just a brief comment about the National Public Health Leadership Institute. How many people in here have participated in it? I know at least a couple of you have. So for those who are familiar with it, I won't say too much depth, except it's a terrific program. It's similar to the regional and more local training institutes, but it brings together a real diverse range of people from across the country. You see what the goals of it are up on the screen here. Anyone who's interested in more information about it, we highly recommend it. Happy to chat with you afterward, or you can go to this website to find out more information. Quality time, the notion of quality time. When my team got together as part of this group, it was our charge to come up with a topic. As in our year, they experiment with the pedagogy every year. Our year was an experiment to do group projects. And as we thought through the different topics we could come up with, what unified the group of us was the fact that we, most of you probably, are often very overwhelmed. Very overwhelmed with our work, the quantity of email, the quantity of meetings, the frequency with which information gets thrown at us all the time. And especially now in this economic climate, the amount of pressure we have to do more and more with less and less and smaller staffs is really quite overwhelming. So we thought to ourselves, we're going to devote our brain power, our teamwork over the period of this educational process to thinking about what is quality time and how might we make some suggestions and model some behaviors that can actually improve it. How many in here would like to have more quality time in their work? Let's see, okay. Not everybody. Okay, so for those who didn't raise your hand, we will hope that these skills will be useful for you anyway, perhaps in future work. So one of our goals was to understand the determinants of quality time, as well as understanding the influence of electronic communication on that overarching notion of quality time. And a second goal was to think about strategies for improving our quality time and our work-life balance through the application of electronic tools. Our hypothesis, in essence, was electronic communication, electronic information, on the one hand, is making our lives harder in some respects, or some aspects of it do that, but it also can be a solution as well as a part of the problem. So I'm not going to go through this in enormous depth, except to say that we spent many very highly productive conference calls and discussions, terrific, actually, really intriguing discussions, talking about this notion of how we define quality time. And you see some of the characteristics of how we defined it in terms of things that are important to your ability to do these things. And also a determinant of quality time, when you have it, these are some of the things you can accomplish, that your lives can be, your professional work can be better. Now, another aspect of this, though, is that we determined, I think, and concluded that quality time, professional quality time, or personal quality time is very much of an individual characteristic. So while these might be some things overall that for many people are relevant, for any one person, they may be more or less important, any of these factors. And that's significant and that's important, actually, because when you think about some of the new technology examples I'm going to share, some will be more relevant or less relevant to you, depending on which of these things are most important to you. So then as we dove deeper into the notion of electronic communication, you know, we stopped and thought about what think of our lives, and think of your lives today or this week while you're at APHA. Think how many different screens that you've seen on a daily basis or on a weekly basis. So think, right now I'm staring at this monitor. You're all staring at this screen up here. This is a screen with an Outlook on it, somebody's email. We look at television screens. We look at various screens over the course of our day. Of course, there's a lot of big screens. We see like the electronic billboards that, you know, change before our eyes. As we traveled in, I'm sure we looked at many different screens in our mass transit. We have smaller screens are now proliferating unbelievably. So the number of small screens that we see in a daily basis from our navigation systems and iPods and cell phones and our waiting rooms. I don't think there's even any place you can go to a waiting room or a doctor or any place else, a clinic, where you're not looking at various screens. We're putting screens on watches and they're getting smaller and more portable. And probably the most horrendous of all, our Blackberries and other devices that keep us tethered electronically to the world. And so I share this image with you because this is the problem. This is the challenge. There's, when you have this much exposure to this many screens on a daily or weekly basis in our work, how do you, you know, how can you find quality within that experience? That's one of the challenges. So there are many potential negatives of this overexposure of information. It's disruption is the one that came up a lot in our discussions. It's disruptive. It buzzes. Your email chimes when the new email comes in, and many other characteristics of negative experiences associated with overexposure to some of these channels and some of these information tools as a professional, as a leader. And actually, there's been some interesting recent research looking at the notion of sort of BlackBerry addiction, or sometimes CrackBerry they call it, that actually speculates that your brain has a slight dopamine release every time you check your email or get a new email. So there could even potentially be chemical rationale behind that deep feeling we sometimes have. But on the other hand, we also spent a lot of time talking about the fact that there could be some very positive outcomes and uses of these, including these things. With the proper use, with acceptable use of information technology and electronic communication, we should be able to have greater reach and less time and cost of communicating with large numbers of people over great distances, certainly compared with many years ago before all of these devices. Deeper engagement. Engagement's a really important construct in the notion of electronic communication, in the sense that as we engage with people, when we engage with each other interpersonally, we tend to have very deep engagement. You listen to them, you pay attention, you're thinking about what's being said in many cases, or you're thinking about where you have to go next, if you're not. But with electronic communication, the range of engagement can vary dramatically. And you'll hear about some of the examples I'm going to share with you in a minute or two, or we think can lead to much deeper engagement, and which can result in better interactions. Empowerment, providing information through different channels, improving the exchange and input, and also better understanding. Being able to exchange information with people, see them face-to-face, or under certain circumstances exchange information electronically, could help you better understand your staff, better understand your coworkers and their needs and their challenges, which could then make you a better manager, a better leader. So this is sort of, if you think of the positives and the negatives of this, this briefly summarizes it. What I'm going to do now for the next 8 minutes or so is to walk you through some of the specific tools that we talked about. So I presented conceptually where we were coming from. Now I'm going to give you some more specific examples. Because as you think about each of these, and as I share some of these tips and ideas and things to that effect, try to keep in the back of your mind this notion of quality time. Is this something, if I use it better than I'm currently using it, or if I use something I haven't been using before, do I think that this actually might make my professional experience, my time spent at work, more effective, more efficient, and resulting in higher quality? Let me before I jump into this, how many people in this room would consider themselves to be 2.0? 2.0. If you don't know what I mean, you're not. So, okay, a couple people. So, good. Well, you might want to check your email or something else while send a few tweets while I'm presenting this, because this might be pretty basic. But for those of you who aren't, 2.0 means this sort of web 2.0, people who are very plugged into participatory electronic communication. And for those of you who are not, hopefully you'll find some of this new and relevant. Email, we didn't spend a whole lot of time talking about email, except we realize that there are lots of really terrific tips. There's lots of little strategies that people develop to make the use of email more effective. So some people in our group use strategies like labeling, tagging. So they come up with sophisticated color-coded systems so they could triage email more quickly when it comes in, you know, depending on either sense of urgency, source, et cetera. And that, as a result, made it a lot more manageable when they have more time to go back to know how to spend their time in what otherwise could be a pretty unwieldy inbox. That's one example. Another example that was shared was the idea of sorting messages by subject. So if your email inbox gets far out of hand and you sort the messages by subject, then you can potentially very quickly parse through an entire conversation, a string of information all at once, and then handle it and or delete it or file it, you know, all at once. And so I'm not going to go through many more of those. We could spend there's books written on this topic, actually. Since email, unfortunately, is still one of those communication tools that we spend so much time with, improving your email interactions is critically important to improving your quality time. Twitter. We experimented with Twitter and within our group, and the way we started with Twitter was by using daily check-ins. So, you know, we found that some of us in our work, particularly people who are geographically co-located, found it very helpful on a daily basis or a weekly basis. They bring the whole team together for 5 minutes even. Sometimes they do standing meetings, they call it, where no one actually sits down. And you just sort of go around the table, you know, talk about what's the priority for the week, what are some of the big issues going on. What we did in our group, we tried to do anyway, is to do daily and regular check-ins via Twitter. There's an application called GroupTweet. That allows you to create a closed group so you can send a Twitter message that only goes to the members of your group. And there's other ways to accomplish the same concept. But we found it to be, you know, we didn't use it consistently, but when we did, it was a nice way for the group to stay checked in. And since then, I've been spending a lot more time in Twitter. And people in here, active tweeters? One or two people? I really encourage people. This is a lot harder, it seems, for a lot of people to adopt. More compared to Facebook or some other challenges. But there's incredibly great information exchanged daily, you know, minute by minute on Twitter. And I really do encourage people to take the leap. And what's really nice about Twitter compared to a lot of other social media tools is it's an open application, which means that all these other companies and groups could create free or low-cost applications that sit on top of Twitter and share an open API, which means that the data transmits back and forth electronically. So like TweetDeck, for example, on an iPhone or on a web on your PC is a great way to help sort through the otherwise. Using Twitter is a lot like drinking from a fire hose, so because of the amount of information that comes through it. But there are all these other great tools that you can use to make it more palatable. Blogs were another channel we used. You know, blogs get a reputation of being, you know, sort of amateur journalists or people with ideas that they can go out and share their ideas. But blogs can be used professionally within groups, within networks. You can have closed blogs that only members that you and your peers can use. And that was one way that we shared information. And Wiki as well. Wiki, again, you know, Wiki is a collaboration tool. It's a simple, often free collaboration tool where people can post information. You can get in and edit and share information. There's all kinds of free Wiki tools out there that you can adapt and use in almost no time. And bear in mind, one of the really important things about this as a leadership tool is this notion of creating closed groups or inward-facing groups using these tools, so that you don't have to create something beautiful and pretty and publicly accessible. You can create these tools within your networks. Google Docs was another really interesting tool we used. Anybody in here use Google Docs at all? A few more hands on that. Google Docs is an incredibly powerful tool to share information, especially with groups working on the same files or the same projects. It's a great way to share information for shared reports and things like that. We also got involved in a number of social networking tools. Facebook is one. The page that's up here is the page from our cohort. So all the people who were in our NPHLI class. But in the course of sort of experimenting with Facebook for our group, all of us joined, and I think to various degrees of depth of use. But it really, it's anybody in here? How many on Facebook in here? So more than half, I think, which is great. If those of you who haven't tried it, both on a personal level and a professional level, I think there's a lot of value there. I will say, again, I could spend all of my remaining time giving you tips around that as a professional leader about what's appropriate, what's not appropriate to do and put up on Facebook. But there are some great websites on that. So if you're already on Facebook or you're thinking about it, I do encourage you to read a few other people's blogs about leaders using Facebooks to make sure you're not undermining your career by what you share. Group sites, you can create your own social networks. This is a group we created through my work at CDC that has more than 700 members on this. This is a health and risk communication network. The very free, powerful tool. Ning is another very popular social networking tool. This, again, as I said, we made with GroupSite, and a great way to link leaders together. And what I like about some of these tools compared to LinkedIn, for example, is that it is a little more social. It's not, you know, LinkedIn feels very dry to many people. It's just your Vita and things like that. This is not quite as social as Facebook, but it's somewhere in between, in a nice space in between. And the last set of tools is mobile. And some people, I don't know if anyone here was in our panel this morning about mHealth or mobile health, but mobile is becoming an incredibly important platform in public health, both domestically and globally, in terms of how we reach audiences, both on the surveillance side as well as a health promotion and intervention side. And mobile and the different applications we could run on mobile are becoming, I think, more and more important in the leadership information exchange world. And the device, by the way, on the far right, anybody know what that is? Yeah. Yeah, that's the Droid that just came out. The Verizon, the alleged iPhone killer. For those people like me who don't have very good AT&T wireless coverage, might be a really nice viable alternative. But there are. I'm not. Again, I could spend all my time on this. There are so many different ways to leverage mobile as a means of keeping networks linked that I encourage you to be thinking in those terms. And some of the tools of the future, just to whet your appetite. The one on the left is called Google Wave. And Google Wave is a real-time collaboration communication tool that is incredibly powerful. Right now, it's an early stage, sort of an invite-only app through Google. It's sort of alpha through Google, and it'll be beta available probably within a couple of months. And I really encourage all of you, as soon as it becomes available, to start playing with it. What I've seen and used with it, it has so much power in terms of the ability to both synchronously and asynchronously share information and create conversations. What this brings to email and chat and everything else, depth that we don't have through many other approaches to using it. On the right is video. There is no more powerful medium other than beyond interpersonal information than video. And with these kinds of flip videos and the Sony video, I like the Sony one better because the camera actually, the lens flips around so you could see yourself. Because if you're videotaping yourself to share information via video, you know, you want to see what you look like, if you're framed in the square or not. But video as an internal communication tool, leadership communication tool, a lot of companies and innovators are doing this now. Instead of sending your weekly update via email, record a 45-second video and send it around or send a link to it around. Much more deep, expressive way to share information. So second to last slide, some of the barriers to this information is there are deep barriers, and probably none more profound than the fact that IT professionals, our IT gatekeepers, often are not letting us get access to these things. You need to work closely with them so they understand the value of it. And then in conclusion, in essence, quality time, complex, multifactorial, very individualized. But social media has a role, has a place to make it better, we think. Not a substitute for interpersonal interaction, but nonetheless, when you have relationships already, it can add on them and build on them. We think it has great opportunities. So with that, I'll say thank you, and this is the rest of our class up here.